Hey, welcome back. So this is episode 3 of Nippon 2.0. I'm trying to update these podcasts once a week, and so I'm going to hold myself to that commitment, and hopefully you guys, my listeners, will regularly come back and check me out. So first episode was about sushi. The second episode I hit on martial arts, specifically karate. Today I'd like to talk about trains. You know, I had a list of things that I'd like to talk about, and trains was always on that list. I mean, if you live in Japan today, you know what I'm talking about. The whole country runs on a very advanced and sophisticated network of trains. And if you're planning on making a trip to Japan, undoubtedly you will be using the train system. It's just, it's the way the Japanese people get around. And it's, you know, so convenient that there's really no reason why you shouldn't take trains to get from, you know, point A to point B. And so let me kind of go into, you know, the history of the train system in Japan, and talk a little bit about why it's so important to the Japanese culture and its their primary mode of transportation. Japan, you know, is an island nation, as you know, and Honshu, which is the main island, is where most of the population is. That's where you'll find the big cities of Tokyo, Nagoya, Osaka, and That's really where the population is. And so unlike most countries, especially, you know, North America, where we have a large piece of land and we have population centers pretty evenly distributed all over the place, it makes, you know, train travel pretty much, it doesn't make it very practical. But in Japan, which is, you know, top to bottom, roughly the size of California, and Honshu, which is, again, that, you know, central main island where you have most of all your people, train travel becomes really attractive. And then when you look at the cities like Tokyo and Osaka and Nagoya, where, you know, you've got tens of millions of people in very tightly condensed metropolitan areas, train travel just becomes all the more logical, right? So I guess what I'm trying to get to is trains will take you anywhere and everywhere you want to go, for the most part in Japan. Now there are some remote areas of Japan in the countryside where maybe train travel isn't as practical, but let's just work on the premise that most of, you know, you guys are in the big cities, and you know, that's where you're going to be conducting most of your work. And if you're traveling into the countryside, which I highly recommend that you do, you know, you can investigate other options to get around. Most likely car, right? Yes, if you're in the big cities, trains is going to be a big part of your daily commute. Both as a tourist, as a resident, as a visitor. Okay. Now, there are a couple of different trains, and I kind of want to hit on some of the different trains that you might see, because it's not all the same. The first train is really the ones that are operated by the government, or have very close ties to the government. And that what I'm talking about is Japan Rail, the Japan Railway Company. Now, the Japan Railway Company, you know, although they may be, you know, commercial and private entities, I mean, they do have their roots, you know, back to when, you know, the government was pushing a lot of these initiatives to build out infrastructure. That was primarily done in the JR tracks. And we have a lot of different individual JR companies, like we have the East Japan Railway Company, which is primarily servicing the Eastern Japan area, which is Tokyo. And then you have the West Japan Railway Company, which primarily serves Osaka. And then you have, you know, Kyushu, Hokkaido, and all these other different regional players within the JR company, and they are primarily responsible for doing all of the maintenance and operations of all of those, you know, individual lines. Okay, so when you're traveling in Japan, most likely than not, you're going to be riding one of these. I mean, these are the most prominent groups. You know, when you're in Tokyo, the Yamanote Sen, the Tokaido Sen, the Keihin, Kohoku, all of these train lines are part of the JR system. Now, there's also private rail. Private rail, you will see, they don't carry the JR logo. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is, depending on the kind of line that you're going to be riding, determines the ticket that you're going to need to buy. And these tickets are sold in different places within a train station. And so if you're taking a JR train and you need to transfer to one of these private line trains, undoubtedly you're going to have to exit the JR component of the station and then find the station that services that private line. It could be a little bit confusing, especially to, you know, someone visiting the country. Obviously, if this is part of your daily commute, you've probably got the whole routine programmed in your head, and so it shouldn't be much of an issue at all, right? But for a visitor, this could be a little complicated. I can tell you, you know, my first interactions with trying to transfer between the different train companies, you know, was a little high on the anxiety gauge. There, you know, I should also mention, when you're in Tokyo and when you're in Osaka, there are subway lines as well. So you've got the rail, which is above ground, and then you have your subway lines, which are usually below ground. And the subway lines are also privately managed. In Tokyo, they have the Tokyo, I think it's called the Tokyo Underground system or something. And so when you're taking JR, and then you know, if you're going to Tokyo Eki, for example, Tokyo Eki being the main train station in downtown Tokyo, if you want to transfer to a subway line, you know, you're going to have to leave the JR station or the JR side of the station and find either the private line or the subway line that you're looking for to make that transfer. In Japanese, that's called norikai. It's a good word to know if you ever need to, you know, talk about how to transfer. You can always ask someone about the norikai system, and you know, that should help at least get the conversation going. So in addition to local trains, to private trains, there's also the Shinkansen system. The Shinkansen system is what, you know, is more commonly referred to outside of Japan as the bullet train system. The Shinkansen system is also operated by Japan Rail, the different Japan Rail companies. And, you know, this is primarily used for long distance travel. So if you're trying to get from Tokyo to Nagoya or Tokyo to Osaka, or Tokyo to, you know, parts north, like Niigata or Tohoku, this is a really convenient option. I mean, you can fly, but I can almost guarantee, with all of the, you know, security and bag check and all the, you know, other stuff that goes on with air travel, you save a ton of time by, you know, using the train system, because you know, all of that is much more lax, right, from a security standpoint. And the Shinkansen system is always on time. It is extremely fast and efficient. The food that they serve on the Shinkansen is pretty good. You know, there's this whole culture of ekiben. Ekiben is basically, I guess, short for ekibento, which is station, you know, lunchbox. And they serve these both on the train as well as off, you know, the train in the Shinkansen part of the station, because usually people are buying these and getting on the train for a couple hours, and you know, it's nice to have some food with you. You can drink on the train, right, in addition to eating. And so it's a very relaxing time. If you've never rode the Shinkansen system, if you're in Japan, you're traveling to one of the other cities, you know, further out, and you have a Shinkansen option, I would highly recommend it. Shinkansen also has different classes of ticket, right? And so there is the normal ticket. There's also the green ticket. The green ticket is a much more luxurious experience. It's almost kind of the equivalent of business class. So, you know, bigger seats, nicer amenities, right? Not as crowded. And I don't believe they have a standing, you know, policy. So everyone's got a reserved seat. Shinkansen, even though, you know, you can also reserve seats, and most people do, when it gets very crowded, especially around the holidays, there are people just standing in the aisles or by the doors. It can get a little bit crowded. It could remind some, you know, travelers of the Tokyo, you know, train system, even though you're traveling, you know, from, you know, some of these other remoter parts of the country. So, Shinkansen, really highly recommend it. And if you're a foreigner, traveling there on a visitor visa, right? Tourist visa, short-term visitor visa, you can buy JR passes. I would look online for, you know, current prices, but they are sold in different durations. So you can get a 3-day pass or a 5-day pass, seven, I think they go all the way into like 10 and 14, but you can buy these passes and basically you can ride, all the JR trains, for that system, for free, right? Once you buy the pass. And so, extremely convenient for tourists. You know, if you're familiar with the Eurorail pass, very, very similar. I've used it on multiple occasions, and if you're only going to be traveling in the eastern part of Japan, they have an eastern JR rail pass. Or if you're going to be traveling throughout Japan, then I'd highly recommend that you buy the all-inclusive JR, you know, the whole country plan. And then you don't have to worry about, you know, moving between the different regional JR companies. So that'll get you on the Shinkansen, which is, you know, a huge savings right there, because once you get on a Shinkansen, it's basically like taking a small, you know, plane trip, right? So in US dollars, Shinkansen ticket usually starts around 150 US, somewhere around there. And I think a JR pass, even at its cheapest form, is like $300, right? So, you know, you take the Shinkansen, you know, two times, I think you're already in the money, and you're just playing with, you know, house credit at that point. So if you really want to max it out, you know, go somewhere, you know, like Kyoto or Kyushu. They just opened a Shinkansen line into the Hokuriku area, which is the northwest part of Japan, facing the Sea of Japan. And, you know, jump on and off that train, you know, like on a daily or every other day basis. And you're going to be very, very happy you did buy a JR pass in advance, because it's going to make traveling all the more easier. And it's not something that's available to the, you know, to the domestic community. And so I've actually shown, you know, local Japanese my pass on occasion. They were always curious, what is that? You know, they've never seen that before, right? It's kind of cool. Let's talk a little bit about the culture of riding trains. I talked a little bit about Ekiben. Ekiben is, again, the lunchbox, which is, you know, definitely something I would highly recommend people pick up, especially if they're going long distance and riding the Shinkansen. I'll say one other thing about the Ekiben is usually the food that they use is reflective of the local area that you're visiting. Okay, so if you're in Tokyo, you're going to get a very very standard kind of Tokyo or Edo style bento. But if you're, you know, in Kansai, you know, the what they put in the box is going to reflect, you know, Kansai cuisine. And that's going to be true of any of the Shinkansen stations. They do a very good job in incorporating the local cuisine. So it's a, you know, grand time to try all these different foods, even while you're just, you know, commuting by rail. I would also say, the train system is very, there's a very high level of politeness that goes on, and I think this resonates throughout Japanese culture. But you're going to see it on the trains. People tend to not engage with other people, right? They want to try and keep the area, the space, as quiet as possible. So you won't hear too many people chatting it up, right? Or, listening to music without headphones, or talking on their cell phones, right? I mean, if you've ridden the trains in New York and Chicago, or even the BART in the Bay Area, you know what I'm talking about, right? People here in the States tend to have little consideration for their fellow passenger. That's like the exact opposite of what you'll find in Japan. In Japan, you'll notice, there are signs that even say, put your phone on vibrate. In Japanese, they call it manner mode. And it's really to drive home the concept that, you're sharing this space with a lot of people. Some of them are, quite tired from a day's work. And so the idea is that we're trying to, make the commute as peaceful as possible. So I would recommend that, when you go to Japan, not only keep an eye out for this because it's quite interesting, especially coming from the West, but also to kind of do as the Romans do and kind of fall in line, because otherwise you're going to get a lot of looks. I had a friend traveling with me in Tokyo once. And he was really excited because it was his first night, and he was making a lot of noise, getting really hyped up. And yeah, that didn't go well because everyone was basically staring at him, and he got a little embarrassed. But that's definitely one. So it's the kind of noise concept. The second I would say is kind of physical contact. The Japanese people in general are very hesitant, reluctant to have a lot of physical contact. It's not part of the DNA. I mean, Japanese don't regularly shake hands. They're starting to do more and more of that, I would say, over the last 30 years. It's been kind of a forced upon tradition because of more and more interactions with the West, especially with regards to business. But Japanese, for the most part, don't hug people, friends or colleagues. Touch is kind of frowned upon. I'm sorry, frowned upon. But it's just not something that's commonly done. And so the one exception is when you're riding the train, and people ride trains daily, right? And I'm sure you've seen videos of this on YouTube or on A&E or History Channel or whatnot. But when during the rush hours, it's a lot of people riding these trains. It's basically like it's like a sardine cannery, and so you're going to be pushed up against a lot of people that you don't know. The Japanese try. At least, I would say 90, 95% of them try very hard to make this experience as least disturbing as possible. And so they try and get on very slowly. They keep their hands to their sides. Once they get on the train, they try not to move around too much. As the train is rocking and rolling, they try not to hit, or lean into the person next to them. It's kind of an interesting art in itself. But I would suggest, just try and do the same, right? If you're probably not going to have a seat, if you have to ride one of these trains, which I would recommend that you try not to, if you can, avoid it. But if you have to, try and act like them, because that really is kind of the order to the madness. Everyone's got to get from point A to B, especially if it's a commute to work. And so they're all just trying to get through their day. So I talked about noise. I talked about, you know, the standing, the commuting, and those really very tight trains during rush hours. Let's see. I'll talk a little bit about kind of the process of buying a ticket and getting on a train, because I'll tell you when, you know, the first time I did it, it was a little bit strange. But if we're talking about the local trains, local JR trains, like the Yamanote, which is the main circular line in Tokyo, when you get to the train station, there's going to be a big map. And on the map, there's going to be numbers, which is the price of the ticket from where you are now to get to those other train stations. So, you know, if you're standing in Shinjuku and you look at the train map, all of the prices that you see are reflective of you starting your trip in Shinjuku. And you figure out what station you're trying to get to, and then you look at the price underneath it, and then you go and buy your ticket. Where this becomes a bit of a issue is some of those signs are all in Japanese, and it's very hard to read if you're not familiar with what the characters look like. And it's not just hiragana and katakana. I mean, we're talking about the kanji characters, and these are the Chinese characters, and so it can be a very stressful time if you don't know what, not only where you're going, but also what the train station's name looks like in Chinese characters. If there's an English map, that's good. It's definitely a start. I would go there. But I've been to a lot of train stations where there are no English signs. You may have to ask someone. Anyone in uniform might be able to help you. And so that's the first thing, is figuring out how much it costs to get to a particular train station. Once you know how much it costs, maybe it's 280 yen, for example, then you go up to the machine. The machines now, especially in Tokyo, are all bilingual, maybe even more than bilingual. They might even have Chinese and Korean as well. But you can opt to change language, and I would, because it can get a little complicated. First, what you want to do is, regardless of the language, the process is pretty much the same. You need to select how many passengers, and then you're going to see a light up where you select the price, right? So one passenger will produce one ticket. If you have two or more, it'll produce multiple tickets, and it'll do the math, okay? The great thing about train ticket systems in Japan is you can put any form of cash, and you'll get all your exact change. I think the U.S. needs to do some work in this respect, right? I mean, how many times have you shown up to a bus terminal or a train station and not had exact change? It can get a little bit stressful. But all the train systems, you can even put a $100 bill or Ichimayen, the 10,000 yen bill, and it'll spit out all the change, including the bills. So very, very convenient and effective and safe, okay? So once you get your ticket, then there is usually a turnstile, and then you insert your ticket into this kind of vacuum, machine. It'll suck the ticket into the machine, and then it'll spit it out on the other side. And sometimes there's doors, sometimes there's no doors, but the doors will open automatically if there are doors. Then you pull your ticket out. You want to keep that ticket stub, because when you get to your destination, you're going to use that same ticket stub as you exit. Okay, and this is pretty much true for all train systems that I know of in JR, the private train companies, the subway works the same way, and Shinkansen works the same way too. Interestingly enough, the Shinkansen, you might have two ticket stubs or three ticket stubs. My understanding is you put them all in at the same time. So the machine is smart enough to, distinguish the direction and which one was on top and all of that. But just put all two or three that you have into the machine at once, and it'll do its magic. I wish I could go into more detail, but I should probably stop there. Let me also mention that for the last, 5, maybe 7 years, Japan has gone to this non-contact electronic payment system. So rather than going to the ticket counter and buying a ticket stub using cash, you can also buy a card, right? And then you can load up the card with money. And then when you go to the machine, you just swipe the card or hit the card against the sensor, and it'll deduct the money. So, you know, the U.S. is doing some of this now with Apple Pay, right? If you've got an iPhone. But Japan was doing this, you know, seven, eight years ago, right? So like probably 2006 or seven. I don't know if I've got my dates right, but literally, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. And these cards in Tokyo, they're called Suica. And in the Kansai area, I believe it's called Pasmo, something like that. But you can see signs. And you can use these cards not only for, you know, JR, but I believe you can use them for the private rail, you know, subway systems, and even some shopping, right? So if you're in a convenience store or Starbucks, sometimes they will also accept Suica payments or Pasmo payments. And so this card, you know, is you know, very, very commonly used. Oh, you can also use them on buses. So it's just really convenient. I would highly recommend that you get one of these cards. I think you have to put an initial deposit of 1,000 yen to get the card made. I've never returned a card, but I imagine if you return the card, they give you your 1,000 yen back. So if you're only there for a week or two, I would look into it. And it'll save you a lot of anxiety in the long run, because you don't have to worry about all the different prices on a trip-by-trip basis. Okay, but that's if you're going to be using the train a lot. If you're going to be chauffeured a lot, or you're planning on walking, maybe not such a good idea. But, you know, think about it, do some research, and look into it. It'll make traveling on the trains that much easier. So, yeah, I talked a little bit about, you know, I'll end with stations. You know, the trains are fantastic. But I also say that the stations in Japan, and they come in all different sizes, they are kind of the central point of interaction in Japan. So people meet at stations. They do most of their shopping and when they go out to eat, or most of that is around the stations. And this is especially true in the big cities, because the stations are almost everywhere. And, you know, Japan is organized in a way that all of what you want to do when you're visiting these different parts of the city are organized pretty much around the stations. So really convenient, right? Because, again, you know, coming from the American, you know, mindset, sometimes the train stations are not in the part of town that you want to get to, right? You got to figure out another way, you know, by car or by bus. That's usually not the case with Japan. In Japan, you know, you walk out of the station and there it is, whatever you're looking for, right? If you're going to Akihabara, which is the electric area, you know, they sell all the newest gadgets and stuff. When you walk out of the station in Akihabara, you're going to see all the stores, right? That are selling all the devices, all the maid cafes, all the things that you're there in Akihabara to do, right? You're going to see right outside of the station. In Japanese, they call that ekinomai. It's literally in front of the station, all of that stuff. And at the most, you're going to be walking a couple minutes, right? If you're looking for a particular store, you know, maybe that particular store might be a little bit further away from the train station. But usually in all the maps and stuff, they all write how many minutes it takes to walk from the nearest train station. So again, going back to the whole mentality of, you know, that these cities are being planned around the stations, and with the idea that the people that are coming to these businesses are coming by rail. Okay. And that's going to be true of, you know, Shinjuku, Shibuya, all these big train stations. You walk out and boom, there it is, right? For those that are, you know, that are listening to this that are familiar with the train systems in New York, for example, you know that there are many exits. I would definitely pay attention. If you're going to a particular train station to go to a particular restaurant, make sure you jot down which exit you need to come out of, because that can change everything, especially with rail. I mean, you think about it, right? There's train tracks that probably divide east and west, and if you come out the west exit but you really needed to get out of the east exit to get to a restaurant or meet a friend, you've got those train tracks to navigate, and you can't cross those train tracks everywhere, right? So it can be a bit of a pain in the ass to get from one side to other. So pay attention before you leave the station what exit you need to get out of to get to wherever you need to go. Okay, and sometimes it's east, west, sometimes they have names. But anyway, just pay attention to that, because I've screwed that up many times. that's pretty much all I wanted to hit on. If you've got any questions, please leave them in the comments. If you haven't already subscribed, please subscribe. I'm looking to, you know, grow my audience base and share the information I have about Japan. I hope you enjoyed listening. This was episode 3 of Nippon 2.0. Thanks. Signing off.